This lecture's short. It's been a long couple of weeks and a long morning for you guys, I'm sure. We're going to look at, as the last topic in this course, the Wigner function, which is an alternative way of representing quantum mechanics. The same Wigner, yeah. He's a lot. Wigner functions are an example of something we call a quasi-probability representation. So what is a quasi-probability representation? It's an alternative way of describing quantum mechanics, an alternative framework for quantum mechanics. And I want to emphasize that it's a completely respectable and technically useful framework for writing out all of the things in quantum theory. Very useful way of writing out all of the things in quantum theory. It's different than standard Dirac notation and formulation in a Hilbert space. It's an alternative, but it gives all the same predictions. It gives all the same answers. And I want to emphasize this respectability and equivalence here, because what are quasi-probability representations as opposed to the standard formulation of quantum mechanics in a Hilbert space? Well, it's a theory of classical hidden variables. On a classical phase space, which I'll call lambda. This space can be continuous. The phase space of position and momentum of a particle, say a harmonic oscillator, or we'll see some examples where it can be discrete as well. Discrete, but still a phase space, still endowed with a symplectic structure. So these things sort of sound a bit contradictory, because I just said it's a perfectly respectable, adequate, equivalent representation for all of the things in quantum mechanics. And then I said it's basically a classical hidden variable theory. And we all have it in our head that such things are verboten. You can't have a classical hidden variable theory that's equivalent to quantum mechanics. Well, there's a bit of a caveat on what I mean by classical hidden variable theory here. And let me describe what that is. So first, let me give you what the framework is for this equivalent representation of quantum mechanics. We have quantum states, which in our usual representation of quantum mechanics, we represent by some density operator, rho. I'm instead going to represent these things by a distribution over this phase space. So small lambda is a point in that phase space, capital lambda. So this thing's like a probability distribution. In that I want, so I said this phase space could be continuous or discrete. When I write a bunch of expressions where I sum over all the possibilities or integrate over all the possibilities, I have to sort of just pick one to write a general framework. Let me just sort of use the sum. But if it's a continuous phase space, that's an integral. Normalized like a probability distribution, meaning if I take what's the quasi-probability that it's going to be in some state lambda for any lambda, then this has to be 1. I have quantum operations. It in my standard framework for quantum mechanics, represented by completely positive trace-preserving linear superoperators. These are going to be represented within my quasi-probability representation by a distribution that looks like it's like a conditional probability distribution. It takes some point lambda prime in this phase space, continuous or discrete, tells me where it maps to, maybe deterministically, or maybe if it's a noisy map, it's sort of giving the probabilities of quasi-probabilities of mapping to different points. So this thing is like a conditional probability distribution, and it is normalized accordingly, like conditional probabilities are normalized. I won't write it out. We also have measurements. Which in our framework for quantum mechanics standard framework are represented by POVM elements, E sub M. I'm going to represent these things as, again, conditional probabilities. I want to know what, given that I'm in some classical state lambda in my phase space, what's the probability, that quasi-probability, that this outcome M will signal? And so it is also normalized as such. These distributions, all of them, are real valued. As I said, they're normalized as you'd expect. I'm representing all of the elements of my quantum theory according to these distributions. Then quantum mechanics tells me that there's a Born rule that allows me to calculate the probability, given that I have some preparation, rho. I acted on it with some super operator or CPTP map, some quantum operation E, and then finally did a POVM measurement and got the outcome M. What is the probability from the Born rule in standard quantum mechanics? That's given by trace of the measurement on the preparation once transformed by this intermediate map. If I wrote out what that probability is in my quasi-probability representation, I would say, well, think of now the preparation is described by some distribution over some point in the phase space. I don't know exactly what that point is within my classical hidden variable theory. I'm going to have a distribution that describes what it could be. I'm going to update that according to this super operator, this quantum operation. So here I should put the primes in the right place. And then finally, I want to know what's the probability that the outcome M will signal. And then I sum or integrate over lambda, lambda prime in lambda. And that will give me the probability of that outcome, just like you'd expect if it was a classical hidden variable theory. And so you go, oh, isn't this exactly the type of thing that Einstein wanted? We don't know what that underlying phase space is, maybe. We don't know when we have a preparation exactly what gets prepared, but it's described by some distribution over the possibilities. Then there's some dynamics on that, which leads to an update in my knowledge, my understanding about the system. I get a new distribution, and then I say, what is the probability of getting some outcome at the end? And that gives me my Born rule probabilities. So if I've managed to represent quantum mechanics in this way, you know, I say this is exactly the type of classical hidden variable theory that Einstein wanted. Of course, we know that that is ruled out. What's the catch? The catch is these don't need to be actual probabilities. They're real valued, they're normalized appropriately, but they can take on negative values. That deserves an exclamation mark. Okay, what does that mean? Maybe it doesn't have to mean anything. We're just looking at an alternative representation for quantum mechanics. We're not trying to do anything new. We're just trying to find an alternative way of formulating the mathematics of it that allows us to describe preparations, transformations, measurements, calculate Born rule probabilities. Here's an alternative framework, perfectly legitimate, perfectly respectable, actually quite useful for a large number of calculations we do in quantum mechanics. So people do use this all the time. They just accept that these are real valued, normalized functions, but that can take negative values. You accept that, you just calculate with them, and that gives you quantum mechanics. No problem. Then there's the other question about, okay, well, why does it look so much like probability theory? Why does it look so much like a classical hidden variable theory, except for the fact that they can go negative? So it's definitely not. So then there's, of course, an interpretational issue if you want to give some sort of actual physical meaning to those negative values. Perhaps more usefully is to say, well, you know, just the fact that the Born rule can be written in this form, what other aspects of quantum mechanics are sort of expressible in a notion of probabilities, you know, that I can say, oh, I'm updating something, I apply Bayes' rule, or, you know, here's how I appropriately condition on my information about this system, given that I've learned about that. Can I use the same machinery of probability theory to calculate things in quantum mechanics, and is this representation the way to do it? And we find out that yes, it very often is. That the things, it's not just the Born rule that looks sort of like an extension to these things going negative of the classical rules of inference, but it seems like basically all the classical rules of inference extend in the right way to quasi-probabilities, and that can explain a lot of the things that's in quantum mechanics, but not all of them. And in particular, anything where you actually have to apply some interpretation to a system described by a negative quasi-probability, then we don't know how to do that. We don't know what is the meaning of such a statement. So there's the two aspects to using Wigner functions. One is completely respectable, useful tool for calculating things in quantum mechanics. It's an equivalent formulation. Second is, by casting things in this language of probabilities, can it draw out some intuition about how the rules of inference apply to quantum systems and how perhaps they're modified by the rules compared to the rules for classical systems? Okay, so that's a quasi-probability representation, and let me define the standard one, which is the Wigner function. Here we will take the phase space to be in one dimension, just a single position and momentum of a particle moving in one dimension, perhaps something like a harmonic oscillator. Okay, so to define the Wigner function, first a little reminder of some notation on Weyl-Heisenberg. Heisenberg, of course, advocated the use of operators. Here I'm going to use capital X and capital P just because we're going to have some also non-operators but classical variables, X and P, where I won't put hats on them, and I want to distinguish those things. Heisenberg argued that we should think of these operators with these commutation relations as such. Very useful for physicists. They're unbounded operators, and there's problems associated with that. It was Weyl who advocated that we should think mostly in terms of this representation of basically thinking of those as being an algebra. What's the group generated by them? The group would be our momentum boosts and our displacements. And the nice thing about this file representation for that group is that those are nicely bounded operators, and so a little more straightforward to deal with mathematically. So this in terms of an algebra, and this in terms of a group. And group of, these are the algebra and group of the Heisenberg-Weil representation. And this acts irreducibly on L2 of R. So we've seen this before, thought of as a group, which we're going to now use exclusively. It is actually a projective representation of the group, in that when I take the product of two things, I get a new element. But I get an overall phase. E to the I pi, and then you can check what that is, P1x2 minus P2x1. And you might recognize that as a symplectic inner product on R2, thought of as a phase space, position and momentum for a particle. Okay, so with that reminder of that group of phase space displacements, displacements in position and boosts in momentum, that's non-commutative. If I displace, then boost, or if I boost, then displaced, there's an overall phase associated with how those two things relate. Let me define for any now quantum state in L2 of R, or in particular a density operator on that space, I'm going to define a characteristic function. That's chi sub rho. It's a function on phase space. So these small letters p and x, they're just classical variables in R2, as opposed to the operators x hat and p hat. Okay. This characteristic function is defined as follows. I just basically look at the inner product of the state rho with this displacement operator. Why on earth did I call this a characteristic function? For those of you who've come across characteristic functions before in probability theory, what is it? Well, we associate characteristic functions with a probability distribution, usually by taking a Fourier transform. Okay? It's just an alternative representation. It contains all the information about a probability distribution, but it's often easier to work with its Fourier transform. So is this a, in any sense, well, here's our quantum probability distribution. Rho is containing all of the distribution describing properties of the preparation. Is there any sense in which this is a characteristic function associated with rho? Well, yes. This here, it would be quite clear if I wrote it on a basis, is a Fourier transform over the non-commutative Heisenberg-Weil group. Okay, so not the usual Fourier transform, but thinking of now a generalized theory of Fourier transforms based on groups, we use the non-commutative Heisenberg-Weil group and take a Fourier transform with respect to that group of rho, and this is its characteristic function. So this here is the non-commutative Fourier transform of rho over the Heisenberg-Weil group. That's the justification for calling this thing a characteristic function. Okay, that's enough to then let us define what is the Wigner function. We're going to now take the regular Fourier transform of the characteristic function over the phase space R2. Sorry, I probably should try to have squeezed them on this. So I'll come back to the pictures on the side. Take the usual Fourier transform over R2 and define the Wigner function associated with rho is given by, well, let's write it sort of formally as this Fourier transform operator that takes P prime x prime to P and x of this characteristic function. And if I write it, wanted to write that out for some pure state psi, thought of as a wave function of x, both of those steps are now actually straightforward. Calculating its characteristic function, the displacement operators act nice and straightforwardly on wave functions in terms of x. Because it's an xx just by multiplication by x, px by derivative. We can check how that acts and then take the normal Fourier transform. Let me just give you the final answer, which you can take if you want as a definition of the Wigner function. So what's the relationship here? Rho, we take this non-commutative Fourier transform over the Heisenberg-Weyl group. We get the characteristic function. We take the regular Fourier transform, and we get the Wigner function. There's a way in which I think it's helpful to think of the characteristic function as being the fundamental object here. And then we have, given a characteristic function, two different options for how we can represent our state. All of the information of the state is in the characteristic function, but we want to think about a probability distribution associated with that, or some general notion of what is a probability distribution. If I take the inverse of that non-commutative Fourier transform, if I decide that's the way I should take my characteristic function and get something that is meant to take the place in quantum mechanics of a probability distribution, I get rho, and I get that representation. So there's many ways in which rho, you know, contains the probabilities as well as all of the coherences. That's one option. Another option is to go this way, to just take the usual Fourier transform, forget about that phase space structure, and just pretend that's a normal characteristic function for a classical phase space, and then I get this this Wigner function. Yeah?
So what is this precisely, like, assumption that you can keep variables? It's in that step?
So, there's no assumption that you have hidden variables. It's a natural perspective on viewing this as like a hidden variable theory on phase space. But what it's saying is, I had a characteristic function, which is the fundamental object. If I treated it as if it were just a classical phase space, then it suggests that the probability distribution would be this when I take the regular Fourier transform. It's not a distribution on a classical phase space, and therefore this Fourier transform does not give me a probability distribution. It gives me a quasi-probability distribution that can go negative. So it's meant to be a placeholder for what should be the probability distribution if you had a classical hidden variable theory. But because you don't, you're getting something with negative values. And that's just one way of representing quantum mechanics as something that takes the place of sort of a generalized probability theory. The other option is the traditional one. You say, I recognize from the start there's a non-commutivity in that phase space. The Fourier transform I'm talking about is over this Heisenberg-Weil group. I go that way, and I get my density operator. That's the thing that stands in quantum mechanics for my probability representation. So I like that perspective. Maybe I'm getting too much into the details of it, but thinking of that characteristic function as the fundamental object in some sense. And these are just two ways I can represent something that looks like a quantum probability distribution through two different choices of how I take that characteristic function and Fourier transform it. Both of them give me things that are not directly quasi probability distributions. One gives me a quasi probability. One gives me a density matrix, an operator with all of its algebraic structure. So it's two perspectives on probabilities. Yeah? Oh, yeah. I'm trying to. So what we'll do is now we're going to look at some properties of this and see that it has many properties you expect of a probability distribution, and then some properties that are different, that it goes negative and so on. But that's the goal of the Wigner function, is to have something that's analogous to a probability distribution. If I just stayed with this characteristic function, then I wouldn't have that direct interpretation. I have to think of, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't have good intuition about looking at characteristic functions and thinking about what the value at some point means and so on. They're very useful in analysis of probabilities, but hard to sort of maybe directly interpret. So there's a definition of what is the Wigner function that you get. You can now say, well, let's plot out some Wigner functions for different states. Sometimes you plot it out and you find it is non-negative, and therefore I can view it as a probability distribution. So that's what this top one is showing you. In part A there, we have the Wigner function corresponding to the ground state of the quantum harmonic oscillator, 0. It is a nice Gaussian wave function. It's always non-negative. If I wanted to, I can view it as a probability distribution. It's like, oh, the oscillator does have a position and momentum. I have classical uncertainty about what that position and momentum is. That satisfies the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. But I have this very old and provably wrong perception that there is a position and momentum, and I'm just uncertain about it. That sort of description of quantum uncertainty is uncertainty about something that actually exists. If we tried a couple other states, so here we have, I just stole these from Wikipedia, by the way, so you can look them up yourself. This is the number state 1, the first excited state of the harmonic oscillator, and I think this one is 5. I should have written that down. Here you can see that those functions go negative. I cannot interpret that directly as a probability distribution over a position and momentum. How should I interpret it? I don't know. I don't have to interpret it at all. I can just use that function and also equivalent representations for operators, for quantum operations, for measurements, and so on, and predict all of the things of quantum mechanics involving that state, no problem. I just have to use these negative distributions, these distributions that can go negative. People really do make a distinction, though, between the types of states when I'm able to interpret it as an actual probability distribution and those where it goes negative, and I cannot. It's quite common to see that as a signature of non-classicality of the state or what you're trying to describe. And this has been around almost as a folklore for a long time, that people loosely view distributions that are non-negative and therefore can be viewed as probability distributions over some unknown hidden variable space, the actual position and momentum of the particle. We treat those as classical. Certainly, I mean, it is a probability distribution. In that sense, it is classical. And then if it goes negative, then we say, ooh, that's quantum. I can't think of it in that way. So there's been a long tradition in physics of this sort of perspective on distributions that are non-negative compared with distributions that go negative in a quasi-probability representation such as the Wigner function as a signature of non-classicality. I'll come back to that at the very end because there's been a fair amount of recent work in that direction, which is worth noting. Okay, let's just briefly look at some properties of this Wigner function. So first of all, this Wigner function is, it was not obvious as I wrote it, but it's real, real valued. It goes negative, but if I look at the marginals over, say, momentum, meaning I think of it as if it's a probability distribution over position and momentum, and then I say, oh, what's the distribution just over position? Well, I would marginalize, if it was a probability distribution, I would marginalize over momentum and get a distribution over position. And this gives exactly, you know, if it was a pure state, it gives me psi star psi. It gives me something that is a probability distribution. The marginal is always non-negative. Somehow all of those negative dips in those pictures, if I marginalize, get washed out and it becomes a genuine probability distribution, the probability of finding it in X. Similarly, I can marginalize over X and get so these are strictly non-negative. And then I could also check if I sum over or integrate over both variables that this integrates to one, that it is normalized like a probability distribution.
I think we should not have a square in the definition.
Yeah, you're right. That is the square of, thank you for that. That is the square of the norm. Okay. I can view, if I have pure states, I can view the overlap of those pure states in terms of up to some overall normalization factors. P of X and phi P of X. What does that mean? It's another one of those things where they're behaving like probabilities. If I wanted to think of the overlap of two quantum states is telling me something about the overlap of two probability distributions. Well, how do I calculate the overlap of two probability distributions? Take the product, integrate over everything, and see how much, you know, that's telling me what's the size of the overlapping region compared to all of phase space and the amount of weight on it. That's precisely what we get for the overlap of quantum states. So if you're in that perspective that the Wigner functions are in many ways like probability distributions, just not normalized. You nonetheless still have the property that overlaps of distributions are really describing overlaps of states. So if you then start asking questions about, you know, why can't I discriminate a state psi from a state phi in my theory, it's because I'm thinking of these things as probability distributions that are overlapping. And if I had a hidden variable perspective, I would say, oh, well, one of my preparations is a distribution over these parts of the phase space. My other preparation is a distribution over these parts of the phase space. There's some common region. And if the actual system was in that common region, I wouldn't be able to tell if it came with that preparation or that one. But of course, they're not probabilities. They go negative. Similarly, if I wanted to calculate expectation values of things, I have some operator O, and I want to know what's the expectation of that operator in the state row, then I would just think of there's a distribution describing O. It's got a Wigner function. I mean, the Wigner function takes density matrices to distributions, so I can just, instead of a density matrix, stick in a observable O as an operator into that same map. And I find it's just what you'd expect, you know, the right structure from probability theory to be. I integrate the distribution for that observable with my prior distribution, and it tells me the expectation value. Okay, and then a fifth one, I'm just going to try to briefly sketch out what is perhaps the most one of the most fascinating parts, is if I have a distribution that is non-negative, so I can think of it as a probability over this hidden variable space, and then if I have a transformation, maybe it's evolution under some Hamiltonian, which is going to take that negative distribution to another non-negative distribution to another non-negative distribution, then how does it map that distribution? It maps it exactly as the rules of classical mechanics would tell you it evolves on the phase space. The point on the phase space evolves in a particular way. The distribution I can think of as like a Liouville distribution, and it evolves in a corresponding way on that phase space. If we restrict ourselves to the non-negative states and the transformations which preserve non-negativity, the theory looks like classical dynamics. And this is again suggestive of we're on to something with this perspective. Of course, you know, if I describe anything by a bunch of a function on R that can go negative, I can always normalize that thing and say, okay, it has some or integral over the range to be 1. Now let's view that as a probability. You might say, well, you know, I could take anything and view it as a probability if I normalize it. But if they're negative, that doesn't make any sense. And, there's no real sense in which those things are probability. The fact that it's recovering the right dynamics you'd expect for it actually being a probability says, okay, well, there is something to this interpretation from that perspective of dynamics. There's something to the perspective that there's an underlying dynamics on that phase space which is describing the evolution of this Wigner function. That can be extended to even when those distributions are negative through a modification of the rules of classical dynamics, but one nonetheless still a classical dynamical theory. So here, I'm going to just sum that up with a brief statement that it sort of works well with dynamics. This is perhaps why it is quite a practical tool, you know, in theoretical physics, is people can use this function and then, you know, evolve quantum states using basically classical equations of motion and, appropriately adapted to this framework and get the quantum predictions. Okay. So that's all I'm going to say about the specific Wigner function, which is an example of a quasi-probability representation. In the last 15, 20 minutes, I'm going to talk about a framework for extending this to more general types of quasi-probability representation, and some of the other things that you might explain or learn from this approach. Okay, so here's a way you can make your own quasi-probability representation within something called the formalism of frames, or in particular, I should say it's like a, some people call it the dual frames formulation, formalism. Okay, so what's a frame? I want an operator basis on my state space, my Hilbert space. That basis can be complete. That basis can be overcomplete. But it definitely has to be at least complete. So in this dual frames formalism, we're going to pick two frames. One is F of lambda for lambda in some state space. Let me specify what I mean by that. I'm picking a bunch of operators. If it's a finite dimensional space, Hilbert space dimension D, I'll need like D squared operators at least, but I could pick more, an overcomplete basis. I can in fact pick a continuously parameterized set for an overcomplete basis. Let me label those individual elements of that basis by lambda, and let me take the collection of such lambda and call that my, you know, generalized phase space. It doesn't even have to have a phase space structure. It's just the set, the label set for my basis of frames. Sorry, my basis, which is a frame. I'm going to pick another one, G. This is an alternative basis that has to satisfy some particular property. I want for any operator A, I want F and G to be related as follows, that I can look at what is the components of A in the frame, lambda, sorry, F, and expand that out in the dual frame and reconstruct A. So this is, you know, sort of a standard thing for the idea of a space and a dual space. We picked a basis of operators, maybe overcomplete. We want a corresponding dual basis that satisfies this property for any A, okay? If I think of the components of A in my basis, then I can expand out the operator in that dual basis as follows. And this will give you a quasi-probability representation for any such choice of frame as follows. I define the quasi-probability representation for a position as a function of lambda to be just the trace of F lambda rho. For a measurement, corresponding to POVM element E sub M. I describe that, and I should really think of that as now a conditional probability. So that's the a conditional quasi-probability M given lambda. This is now expressed in the dual frame. And okay, then I can do the same for quantum operations with a bit of a caveat. Okay, so let me make sure I get the order right. I think this is backwards. So lambda, given lambda prime, I think of f of lambda prime. How does that get mapped under E? And now I have to expand this out in the dual frame as follows. This is a bit ambiguous. If frame is overcomplete. Because, you know, there's not a unique expansion of this in terms of G. It is well defined if it is a complete frame. Okay, so this quasi-probability representation. It is a quasi-probability representation of quantum mechanics. This, you can show this. I'll leave this as a bit of an exercise. But you can show that this condition is exactly what you want, such that the Born rule is expressible as prepare with this distribution, update according to this map, and measure according to this conditional distribution. Okay. So it reproduces the Born rule because of this of this condition of duality on the frames. Okay, let me note that, but you can prove it. Reproduces Born rule. And then we say a frame is self-dual if the set F is equal to the set G. In the remaining few minutes, let me give you an example using this frame formalism of a quasi-probability representation for a finite-dimensional system, so not something with position and momentum in this continuous phase space, but something that's discrete. In fact, let's write down what you could call, and what people do call, the discrete Wigner function corresponding to a single qubit using this frame formalism. Okay, you can actually, I could just write down the frames, but let me sort of connect it with the existing Wigner function, give you the motivation for why we even developed this frame. We have a discrete version of the Heisenberg Weyl group on a qubit. Now my displacements look like this. Now my position and momentum variables are just binary valued. They take values in Z2, just 0 or 1. So we have a discrete phase space here, labeled by position is either 0 or 1. Momentum is either 0 or 1. It's periodic. I can think of the Pauli X operator as like a momentum boost. It changes that momentum index by 1. I can think of the Z operator, the Pauli Z operator, as like a position displacement. It changes the position index by 1. And this group is a non-commutative representation of the discrete phase-based transformations, exactly an analogy to what that continuous Heisenberg-Weyl representation was before.
Which one is the dot at what? So the X operator is like
a
momentum?
Yeah, so X is like a momentum boost. Will it help if I go back to this representation? So see, the thing, the e to the I x p hat, did I get that backwards? E to the I x p hat is what displaces you in position by an amount x. So that's going to be the, so you can sort of think of, Yeah, we can think of now there's an operator that looks like e to the I p hat, which we're taking to the power of x, and that operator on our discrete phase space is just going to be Pauli x, and then corresponding for the phase space displacement. So you're right, I just have it backwards. Thanks for that. Okay, with that, I can actually go through and construct what is sort of the analog of a discrete Wigner function in this case. I find that I get a description that is described by frame as follows, and it's a dual frame. So A is going to be both my frame F and the frame G is going to be proportional to A. So the A operator corresponding to the origin is just going to be the sum of the Pauli operators. And then I can create a full frame just by acting with that displacement operator, that Heisenberg-Weil group, on that frame operator defined at the origin. So this gives a general form that looks like half I plus minus 1 to the px plus minus 1 to the xz plus minus 1 dx plus py. Okay, so this set for x and p in z2 is our frame, which is self-dual. And then we define our discrete Wigner function in terms of that frame. Okay, what is this saying? It's saying that I can associate for every density matrix of a single qubit, zero state, the one state, plus state, completely mixed state, whatever, I can associate a function on a 2 by 2 discrete phase space, a Z2 squared phase space. I can think of that this as a distribution, sums to 1, real valued. They won't have, because these are Hermitian and that's Hermitian, this will be real valued. But it can go negative. So, okay, in what sense can we think of that as like a probability distribution? Your first thought might be to ask, what are the states that are represented non-negatively in that discrete Wigner function? And can I think of them as having some sort of classical interpretation? Okay, so we're going to finish with this sort of interpretation. And here we can do exactly that. What we find when we restrict our attention to just the non-negative states of a qubit, that we find these sort of compass points on the Bloch sphere, the eigenstates of the Pauli operators x and y and z are all represented non-negatively in this discrete Wigner function. What do they look like? They look like distributions over this four-point phase space, two values of position, two values of momentum, where I'm just, I know I'm in sort of half the phase space, but not the other. I can say, if I'm in the state 0, I'm definitely either in here or here, but I just don't know which one. But I can interpret that non-negative distribution as like a genuine probability of, here's what I think the actual state of the qubit is in this discrete phase space. I have some uncertainty about it because it's a quantum state. I don't know exactly what it is. The same way that we could interpret the ground state of the quantum harmonic oscillator, that special non-negative state in the Wigner function, as I can think of it as having a position of momentum, I just don't know which one. My knowledge about the system is constrained by the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. In fact, it's more than just sort of that observation. You can show that that set of non-negative states and the transformations which preserve non-negativity are in one-to-one correspondence with a classical hidden variable model that was introduced by Rob Speckens about a decade ago, where he really thought of a simple toy model which captures many of the aspects of quantum mechanics, in particular the aspects which are evidenced in the states and transformations on these compass points on the Bloch sphere. All of that, those aspects of quantum mechanics were captured by a simple hidden variable model where you could really think there was a point in the phase space, I just don't know what, and that these Wigner functions are really genuine probability distributions in this case over what is the actual state of affairs. Now, if within this discrete Wigner function, if I tried to describe a different state, then I would find that it is negative, and I wouldn't have this interpretation. Okay, I want to just end with one more thing about the use of that concept of negativity in terms of actually viewing it as some sort of way of describing the non-classicality that is in your quantum system. So here's the general statement. If everything is described non-negatively, then I have a completely adequate hidden variable model for all of the phenomena described by those non-negatively represented states, non-negatively represented transformations, non-negatively represented measurements. It's like a little classical sub-theory for everything that's represented non-negatively. Now, consider states with negativity, consider operations and measurements with negativity. How can we look at that negativity as a signature of non-classicality? And here's where there's been some recent research focused in this finite dimensional case rather than the original Wigner function. So one area that's been done here at University of Waterloo by Joe Emerson's group, and also I've done some work on this with some students, is to think about constructing methods for doing Monte Carlo simulation of quantum systems based on this idea of there is a dynamics on that classical phase space that is describing the resulting correct quantum dynamics of the system. If everything is described non-negatively in the particular quantum process you're trying to simulate, then you will have an efficient Monte Carlo method for describing that quantum process. And what we can do is say for a particular Monte Carlo algorithm, if it's now describing something that has to be negative, you need to modify that algorithm to somehow be able to make use of those negative functions and interpret them within the Monte Carlo simulation. That increases the runtime of that simulator. How much does it increase the runtime? The negativity of the state or operation or measurement is a precise measure of the computational complexity of that Monte Carlo algorithm. So there's an operational sense to quantifying negativity there, which is related to the runtime of a classical Monte Carlo type simulation of that process based around that phase-based structure. So that's one notion. Another relatively recent notion pursued by Rob Speckens is a precise relationship between negativity and contextuality. So contextuality is one of these non-classical properties of quantum systems, which is in some way constraining the way in which I can think about a system as a classical hidden variable theory. The fact that a system may possess contextuality is a statement about the non-existence of a certain sensible type of hidden variable theory the way Einstein wanted. What Rob has shown in this paper is that the existence of negativity in any quasi-probability representation is a signature that you can construct a proof of contextuality, that you can do something like a Bell-type argument within that theory, and really say, I cannot think of pre-existing values associated with the outcomes of measurements in that theory. And then finally, one that relates to quantum computation, there's a very tangible notion in which we can associate states with negativity, operations with negativity, measurements with negativity, as something that actually powers quantum computation. So the current framework we have, we have many frameworks for doing quantum computation. The standard one that most people use is to use a limited set of operations which can be made tolerant to noise to do most of the computation. But that limited set also has a complete classical description. If I just had that set of operations, I would not be able to do anything that is superior to what a classical computer could do. But if I additionally provide such a computer that can run fault tolerantly in the presence of errors with particular resource states that it can use for teleportation in the way we describe with this Choi isomorphism, can use them to teleport operations through these states. If those states are of a particular form, they can boost the power of the quantum computer to something that is super classical. And a very remarkable result, again, by Joe Emerson's group and some other people here at PI and at Waterloo, is to show that, a direct relationship between what are the types of states that can boost a computer in this way, that can give it additional power. It is precisely those states that exhibit negativity. That, again, we've taken that notion of negativity as somehow a non-classical feature and made it operational in that it's non-classical in that it can boost the power of a computer that was otherwise limited to its classical computing ability. OK, I think that's a good place to stop. Any questions? It's been a long week, I know. Come and see me if you have any. Again, thanks very much. It's been a fun course.